Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Before we even start, bro, you and Moxley, man, wow, I enjoyed the hell out of that, man. I text all my boys afterwards. I said, if you don't know what a main event is, bro, it is right here. I don't care what company you're in. This is the measuring stick. Like, it was, I mean, not that you need to be told this, but I mean, it was just.
It's good to hear, man. I appreciate that. It was quite the war for sure.
You watch so much stuff and, you know, I'm always going to be a fan first. But I was like, all right, I know this is going to be nasty. It was a great story, man. Mox is always one of my favorite guys. Him and I, we battled a lot in FCW and stuff. And we had a Halloween match to pop ourselves, you know, because it's always he's always one of those extreme guys. And middle of the match, I went to look like it was going to be Tax, but it was candy corn. And he took the bump on candy corn, man, and we sold it like Tax. So, I mean.
They're pointy. Those candy corns.
Yeah, and lots of empty calories, too, so you know.
That's right. Dangerous.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, is holding a special two-night pay-per-view event, NWA 74. At the historic Chase Park Plaza Hotel in St. Louis this weekend. All the action takes place Saturday, August 27th and Sunday, August 28th. There's still a few tickets available. Just go to nwatix.com. That's nwatix.com. You can also purchase the pay-per-view there, which will be streaming on fight.tv. The cards for both nights are stacked. And on Sunday night, the NWA World Heavyweight title will be decided. It could be a history-making night as Tyrus, the current NWA television champion, is going to try to defeat Trevor Murdoch and end up with both titles at the end of the night. I got Tyrus on the show today to talk about his return to wrestling and specifically the NWA, how he's preparing for this weekend's big fight and why both the TV and heavyweight titles mean so much to him. Tyrus is also talking about his time in WWE as the Funkasaurus. He explains how he got that gimmick, how much he hated it when he first found out about it, what the late great Dusty Rhodes did for him to help him get over. He shares the story behind the Funkadactyls and how he convinced Naomi and Cameron to join up with him. He reveals what The Undertaker and Bret Hart both said about Funkasaurus. Tyrus also talks about his time in NXT with Bryan Danielson and EC3 and his feud with Edge and Christian. He also reveals how he came to be Snoop Dogg's bodyguard, what it was like to work for the rapper, and you'll hear why he credits Snoop for his return to wrestling and success in the WWE and the NWA. Also, Tyrus talks about his other job as a panelist on the Greg Gutfeld show on Fox and what it's done for his wrestling success, his career, and the NWA in general. It's a great conversation with Tyrus, and it starts right here, right now, on Talk is Jericho. We'll just get into it. We're here with Tyrus. You mentioned FCW and Moxley, and you've got such a long history in wrestling. I think people kind of forget that at times because you've done so many other things, and we'll talk about those. You've been doing this for a really long time, and now you have this huge match with the NWA with Trevor Murdoch for the world title. And then kind of tell us a little about your NWA experience so far.
Going all the way back, I took a break just, during the pandemic and stuff, trying to figure out what I was going to do. I loved my wrestling career, but I didn't feel like I was ready to hang it up. And a lot of times you see guys that get other opportunities outside of the ring and, you know, they don't look back. Well, I mean, every time I was sitting in the chair in Gutfeld or sitting in a Fox News building, I'm looking at my phone, seeing what was going on at AEW, WWE, like watching my friends, you know, Bobby Lashley and Drew and guys who were so kind to me when I first got in the game, like yourself and, you know, Swagger, one of my favorite guys. I think I still owe him like, I think I owe him like 20 matches. I think he carried me for like 2 years in WWE house shows. But, and I was just like, it just wasn't ready to walk away from it. there's that saying that some of us are wrestlers first and everything else is kind of extra. And I think you can relate because, I mean, you've had an amazing career outside of the ring as well. I mean, your household name, Fozzie, is a great band. You easily could have just went into music or acting and moved on from it, but something always brought you back. And personally, I'm glad you stayed, especially after the main event the other night. I just can't get over how great that was. But I just had an itch, and I wasn't ready to just let it go. And so I reached out to Billy, and I was watching NWA on YouTube and stuff, and saw a lot of my buddies there. And Aaron Sandow, who's like my favorite person to beat up, he was out there, and I reached out, and they're like, hey, you know, no promises. We'll bring you in. We'll give you a match. See if you still got it or whatever. And I went in there, and of course, they threw me in the fire. My first opponent was Junior Kratos. You know, Junior was like, he was fired up. I was like, all right, so we understand this is one of the ones we're going to buy beer afterwards. And, you know, just go to work. But once I got through, once it was over, I was like, yeah, I'm back. I'm whatever the situation is, whatever. Starting my way at the bottom, whatever you want, man. Just tell me what to do, you know, what you want from me, and I'll put in the work. And so it just kind of went from there. There was no expectations on Billy's part. And momentum starts building, and you start, you know, once you get your first one, you start to get your legs back, and you start to think, because I was concerned because I had been sitting on my ass for, you know, during the pandemic, following the rules and doing everything remote. And I don't think it really dawned on me until my singer was on, and I was getting ready to walk out against Kratos, and I walked by the mirror and I went, shit, like, oh, we got a lot of work. We got a lot of work to do. And in our business, you can be a super heavyweight and lean on guys, but that can only take you so far. And if your footwork isn't there, if you're not able to keep up, then you're really disgracing the sport that you love. So I had a lot of work to do. But luckily, there was a lot of pandemic bellies going around, so I wasn't the only one. You know, when you walk around, you know, at 350 on a good day, you can't show up to at least compete at championship level at 385, 395 pounds. Just in my opinion, in today's game, the guys are so much more athletic, so much quicker, you know, thanks to guys like Big Show and Kane. You just can't do the, you know, right. one bump. Like, you got to work. And so the game has changed for the big guy, you know, and it was just a process. And then momentum started building. And then, unfortunately, the first guy I see is Pope, and he's got that NWA World Television Championship. And I was like, Dusty had that. Mike Rotundo had that. You know, all the guys that Nikita, all the guys that I looked up to, Arn, Tully, Matt Gutier. And I was like, sorry, Briz. I'm coming for you. Once I got my hands on it, I was like, the momentum just continued to grow. And then I showed up to Fox with my World Television Championship, and they were like, what's going on? I said, you wouldn't ask Muhammad Ali not to have his championship, so don't ask me. So at first, Fox was a little like, how are they going to take you seriously? They took me. I'm a champion. He takes champions seriously. And
sure,
as it showed up, and then they just asked me one question. They said, why? I said, for everyone before me that held this title, and for everyone, you guys don't, wrestling doesn't get enough credit for the amount of stars outside of the ring. When we agreed to this, when I signed with Fox, I said, you can tell me what movies I can do, but you can't tell me where and when to wrestle. And they agreed to that. So what started out was to prove a point. Maybe, you know, it was a little bit of a middle finger to some of the people who always got something to say about people in our business and whatnot. But before you knew it, people who never watched are watching. And the cool part is, because there's a large contingent of, I say this nice way, older fans that watch Fox News that grew up on watching NWA and Georgia Championship Wrestling. And they were going, I haven't seen that title in years. I'm like, it's been around, you know, and all of a sudden they want to go to shows and stuff. And it was been a nice mix to kind of bring the two worlds together, understanding that on TV, wrestling works with anything, but when you're in the ring, there's no time for politics. So there's a fine line there, but you can have it all in terms of if your work is right. And the NWA schedule works really well with my Fox schedule. So I was just able to continue to step up and improve. And then the shit with Nick and Billy fell apart or whatever. And I had been number one contender for about 4 months, but typically with this championship, what they had was is that after your seventh title defense, you basically traded in for a title shot. And I went, okay. I went to Billy and said, this isn't the title that you trade in. And I listed the men before me. And I said, the only way you get this title is if you capture the World Heavyweight Championship and then you surrender it afterwards, like in a tournament and stuff. And then he was like, well, do you have any evidence of this? I said, yeah. Midnight Express were the United States Tag Team Champions. They faced Arn and Tully for the World Tag Team Championships. And for 2 weeks on TV, they held both titles. And then they surrendered the United States Tag Team title. And there was a tournament. Everybody wins. So it's the same thing. And, you know, then Pat said, we'll get back to you and let you know. And they said, okay, we're going to lift the stipulation. You no longer have to surrender the title. So, and that's, of course, why I was able to have 9 and 10 title defenses going into this. So I was able to rewrite history a little bit, you know. And, of course, speaking to the first ever unified world champion, you would respect that. And, you again, and no one expected it because the two top guys in the country, in the world, on the planet, The Rock and Stone Cold, both, you beat them both in one night and made history. So this is not on the grand stage that is, but this is up there. This is a chance to be the first world television champion and NWA champion. So it'll be my own little nook of history. And they can't take, because it's never been done, so no, they can't take it away from me. So unlike most wrestling situations, when this announcement was made, I had 4 weeks. So I basically had a training camp getting ready for this. So I'm going to be the lightest I've been in my career. I'm coming in about 335, trying all kinds of new fun stuff and inner waves and bands and all kinds of stuff like that. And then my film study has been unbelievable. And then I'd just like to apologize to the good guys, the good buddies down here in Louisiana who've been able to come into the gym and let me bounce them around a little bit. So, but I told them, if I win, dinner's on me. And if I lose, it was their fault. So
that's the way, right?
That's the way to do it. So it's a great time, man. I love the fact that it does on any given night, on any given channel, there's wrestling going on. And I love that, you know, with AEW and New Japan, and you have, you know, WWE, of course, and, you know, and then you got Impact and NWA, and, you know, and it's even nice to see ROH is still a president accounting for. So it's a great time to be a wrestler, and it's a great time for our business.
It's great for the NWA to have you representing them, like you said, on Fox News, because you are a regular. So I would assume that's huge for the NWA to have you in that position.
The most seen champion on the planet, I average about 2.5 million people a night. And then when I do, and then typically I do Fox 4 days a week right now. So it's like I'm 4 days on, 3 days off. But given in any week or anywhere, I'll finish up between 12 and 13 million people have watched all the shows I've been on. So it's a great exposure for it's the World Television Championship. So it would make sense for it to be on TV.
To be on television. You're the champion of all TVs.
Yes, which is an exciting prospect. You also got to put your money where your mouth is. You know, that's why everyone, in NWA, everyone's gunning for me. Everyone wants to be the one. I just wrestled my last match with Odinson, and I think he must have hit me with 35 of the most stiffest European uppercuts on the planet. But, you know, it's nice to get out. But it's nice to get in there and see guys, they're focused, and they're coming with 110% every match, so that, which means that, and as you know, this is, you know, is a Hall of Famer, and you've held every title there is on the planet. You got to bring your A game, or, you know, it can change just like that. So,
do you like the NWA style, like the studio wrestling? Such a kind of a unique way of doing things in 2022.
Because I grew up every Saturday running in the house around 4:30 Eastern time in California to watch Superstation TBS. To be in that same building it took you back in it. You think when you go back and you think about when you're watching your kid and you keep telling your brother, I'm going to do that one day. And he's like, yeah, right, fool. And then you're in that building. The nostalgia and the history is great. I mean, obviously, you want to be in the building with, you know, 10,000 screaming fans. But there's something about being in the TV studio and thinking about the history and the fans that are there. It's a little more intimate because you can. And I'm, for one, and I always find someone to pick on in the crowd. This has been my thing. It's ironically how I met my wife. I call them a pigeon. You know, I'll find one person in the crowd, and that's my pigeon for the night. If I'm beating somebody up and they're booing me, that's a guy I stare at while I'm beating them up. And I stole that. Andre used to do that. Haku still does that. You find that one. So in there, it's a lot easier because it's, you know, it's like great. You get to be a part. It's closer. It's life. And then when you watch to back, you remember the sounds you used to hear as a kid. Like, you hear the sounds of the mat, you know, and you'll hear like an individual, you know, coughing and stuff. And you're like, oh, I remember that one. Except the difference is, Arn and Tully would come in there and just beat the life out of a guy for 10 minutes. And you would just hear the sounds of the ring and the squeals from the guy in the crowd and stuff. So it's nice. And then, like I said, we're pushing the chase. And then I think I'm excited because the rumors are swirling that we're going to be in New Orleans. Right now, I'm legitimately the king of New Orleans. I was the king of Orpheus. I got a crown and a cape, and I'm sitting there with the world television channel, and I was waiting for a call from Lawler going, hey, what do you think you're doing? But, you know, it was 10,000 people, a key from the mayor. So if it comes to New Orleans, hopefully it's going to be one of those things where everyone falls in line, because that's the one thing about wrestling. It brings so many different people together. I mean, you'll have a guy who just got out of the banker's office who's running to be at a show, and then you'll have your traditional fan, and you'll have, you know, I'm glad to see the 70-year-old ladies with the canes back trying to hit me going to the ring and stuff.
Right. Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
So how did you become the king of New Orleans? You can't just gloss over that. What are you talking about?
Harry Connick Jr. has the Orpheus crew where they have the giant, you know, every Mardi Gras, they have the giant parades and floats. And Orpheus is the grandest of them all, right? And
gotcha.
I got a message on Instagram from Renee and Sonny. Those are the two that run Orpheus, and they have featured stars once a year to get the honorary king and or queen. And before that was Quentin Tarantino and a bunch of other guys. Yeah, and like John Travolta, a bunch of big stars have done it. So I got a message saying that we would like you to be one of our honorary kings of Orpheus. And I was like, yeah, right. So, and I emailed him back, and I really didn't. I live in Louisiana. I've lived in Louisiana for 7 years now. But whenever Mardi Gras came, natives leave. So we always left. And I think I've been to like one, and I hate parades growing up in California. The Rose Bowl parade was the most boring thing on the planet. So for a kid, you know, you're just watching floats go by. When I said to Ingrid, I said, hey, they asked me to be the king of Orpheus. And she was like, oh, you do it. Idiot, give me the information. I'll handle it. You'll screw it up. So they asked me to do it. And then the response was so crazy that they're like, you're going to have your own float, your own thing. You're not sharing with anybody else. The mayor wants to give you the key to the city. And Jamie Foxx presented it. It was funny because I knew Jamie from back when I was bodyguarding stuff. And I had saved his ass one night from getting beat up. So I had brought that up when he was like trying to like act like he didn't know me. I said, bro, you probably don't remember me, but I remember you. And then I told him when I hit the guy, he went down. Jamie stood over him and did Howard Cosell impersonation where he's like, down goes Frazier, down. Because the guy kept trying to get up, but he was dizzy. So I reminded him of that, and we had a good laugh. But it ended up being, and I had some of my wrestling buddies. So I usually don't go too far without some of my buddies. Chris Adonis was there. I'm on this, the float. The float's amazing. And, you know, you're throwing beads, and I got my crown and my gown and my television title and the key to New Orleans. And they're like, what music do you want to play when you go into the venue where there's, you know, 5,000 Orpheus crew members waiting for you? You come in there. I was like, oh, Ice Cube, Sasquatch. So that's my favorite song. So okay. I'm coming in that stuff, and I'm throwing beads, and I see this jack guy just screaming, like, Tyrus, over here. And I was like, who is that? Oh, please don't let it be mine. And it was Adonis just screaming at the top of his lungs. And I was like, so I threw him, just so happens, he's this diehard Laker fan. I'm a Celtic fan. So, you know, we argue about everything, but I threw him beads and apparently they're purple and gold. And he was convinced I did it on purpose out of respect for him and the Lake. Doctors. And I see him catch it, and I was like trying not to look at him. And you know, Dr. Drew Pinsky was there at my table when we sat down. I said, "Hey, Doc, can you talk to him? he's just, he's out of line, man. And like, and he was like, bro, and like, we made eye contact. I was looking away from you. Like, you were the loudest, like, you're supposed to act like we're supposed to be here. And I'm supposed to fanboy it up. And he couldn't find a tuxedo, so they dressed him like one of the Orpheus members in a really small suit. So he looked like he escaped from like a Teletubby commercial. So like, he did everything, you know, if you bring your boys to the party, there's always one.
Yeah.
Chris Masterlock was the one, but it was an unbelievably humbling experience. And then it was the lead singer from the Pussycat Dolls was the other one. And one of the actors from Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Performers and actors, they don't, with all due respect, but they don't work a crowd like we do. Like if you throw them a microphone, they'll be like, well, I need a speech. What's the lighting?
Yeah.
You throw us the microphone, it's on.
Oh yeah.
And so kind of what happened was, is before that, he had to come out and meet the Orpheus crew, and, you know, and I just cut a promo. And, you know, and then at the end of the night, of course, Harry Connick Jr. was going to get on the piano and sing, and the lead singer from the Pussycat Dolls, she did the thing, and they sang together, and they looked at me and they said, what are you going to do? I said, well, everyone's singing, so I guess I'll go sing. So in front of 5,000 people, I came out there and they handed me a trombone, and I was getting ready to, and I said, I just want you guys to know, remember earlier I said I was going to sing, I lied to you. And I cut a promo and I said, listen, you know, and I was a heel at the time, so I healed it up a little bit. But, and then I did, because wrestlers, we love a cheap pop. So I'm in Louisiana, Redbone Country, and I said, if you could all rise as we sing the Pledge of Allegiance and the flag. They, the entire crowd sang it. Thank God I remember the words. It was a pretty crazy moment. And then I came back to the table and they were chanting Tyrus. And I was like, kind of got a little bit of a leery look from Harry. I was like, well, not all of us have to sing, Bridge. Some of us can just cut a promo. But, you know, you get back there and you're just sitting there. And I just looked at my buddies and they were smiling. And I had Jordan Clearwater there, who I think is a star in the making. He wrestles in New Japan. He wrestles with us in NWA. And he's part of my clique. And I think he's next. I think this kid's future is just unbelievably bright. He was just sitting there and I said, no one's ever better than a wrestler because we're prepared.
True.
We have 1 minute. And if you don't get it, you'll never see us again. So,
yeah.
And that training to the transition to TV and even telling the story and writing a book, that all comes from wrestling.
Sure.
I think about my time in Deep Sloan with me and TJ and Harry and Natty, and the four of us would just be sitting around and just watching film and always cutting promos and going into stores and stuff and then go hanging and banging. That stuff is invaluable. Like, it just, for transition, you know, the only time you struggle is when you do movies, all the retakes.
Right.
That drives wrestlers crazy.
Yeah, you're,
you know,
right.
Because, you know, because we'll do it and we're like, all right, cool, I'll be in the trailer. And they're like, no, we got to do the lighting on this one.
You're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, of course, you know that.
Let me talk to you about this then, because you mentioned quite a few times Fox, and obviously you're a regular contributor. My wife told me to tell you you're her favorite on the Gutfield Show.
Oh, yeah, running into you guys at the movies.
Yeah.
In Tampa.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And the Burger Shop, Burger 21.
And Burger Shop, yeah. Yeah.
But so how has that increased your fan base being on Fox? Because obviously, like you mentioned, that's a lot of viewers watching you on a nightly basis. And obviously, like you said, you know how to be on camera, you know how to be funny, but you also know how to be serious with some of the topics that they're discussing.
I'm a middle of the road guy. Yeah, I'm a Republican, but I'm not a dick about it.
Right.
I voted for Obama twice, and I voted for Trump. I vote based off of what I think is best for my household.
Yeah.
I don't take a backseat to anyone, to coin a phrase from Gorilla when it comes to that. And I'm a common sense guy. I'll question either side of the fence. And I think that's who I am as a person. I can't, even though in wrestling, you're basically, you know, your own personality turned up 100%. But when you're on a network like Fox, you need to be true to yourself. I think
mm-hmm.
I can't be something I'm not. I'm not 100% Republican guy. You know, I'm a Republican, registered Republican, but I have questions and I find jokes in everything.
Yeah. You have common sense.
President Trump had a sense of humor. He retweeted one of my jokes I made about him.
That's cool.
Yeah, the president of the United States. I was talking about, he was calling everybody Sleepy Joe and stuff like that. And I was basically like, come on, man. Like, just because you're up to 3 a.m. on your phone because you can't sleep, maybe you need some of that Rite Aid or something like that, the rest aid or whatever the things that he was sponsoring at the time. And he was kind of like Vince McMahon in the sense where you always hear from one of the agents, like, hey, it's like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, Greg's the agent. You know, Graham come up to me like, hey, the president liked the, really liked your joke, man. He's going to retweet it. And I was like, oh, cool. Thanks, man. I was like, oh, wow. The president retweeted my, my thing. But you have to be, for me, I can't just go off into a character. And we do see that, unfortunately, on opinion pieces and stuff like that. But in doing that, you bring a lot of fans to the table and they want to know more about you. It's such a large, large community. It's such a big fan base. Some of them are wrestling fans, you know, because some go with you, some don't. And then, but you start bringing them into, and when you have almost 3 million people a night watching you, and then they start looking at your stuff on social media and they're seeing wrestling stuff and a lot of classic clips and stuff like that, that I put up there, although I need to work on my social media game. It's just a pain in the ass.
Right.
But it does, your fan base kind of evolves, you know, and you'll have people who have never watched wrestling that are fans of me, and then you, of course, wrestling fans who've been with me since Brodus Clay days. And it's a nice, it's a nice mix, and you kind of hope the worlds cross over. We did a, I did a book signing at our last, it's been kind of a house show. We did a, we do a series of TVs in Kentucky, and did a book signing there, and you know, the, we sold out, and half the people came there for a book signing had not watched, really been to a live wrestling event, and but they weren't really talking about my book at all. They were talking about how cool it was to be at a live event. You know, they enjoyed it so much. And there's so much, if you watching it on TV is one thing, but just like hockey in person, it's a whole other level.
Right. Exactly.
And so I started talking about bringing in new fans, and which is great because I think the more you show of yourself, and again, I think it's important that people see wrestlers for what they are. I mean, when, if you look at Hollywood, Rock, Cena, Batista, Nash, yourself, I mean, guys who reinvented Goldberg. There's so many guys who have launched other platforms based off wrestling. And then I look at myself as a solid mid-card guy in the WWE to be able to go without necessarily the blessing or the push, basically was good luck, future endeavors, and be able to get to it, get to a point where your ratings are kicking their ratings ass. And it's a nice feeling.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it was, sure. It was a nice feeling. And it was... So SmackDown, when it went to Fox, they came to me and said, hey, will you do a commercial for SmackDown? And I was like, sure. Have you asked them? Not that there was anything bad between us, but you know, when you
No, but of course.
Yeah, you know, but I, to say I didn't enjoy that was an understatement. So I did their little plug. You know, like I walked out during the NFL game and like SmackDown is coming to Fox. Enough said. And then, you know, and then I had a big smirk on my face. So it was kind of a nice homecoming.
Full circle.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Let's talk about that though, because like you mentioned now, you're studying tape for your championship match against Trevor Murdoch at the pay-per-view, and you're talking about beating guys up, and you've won 9 television title defenses in a row. WWE was kind of a different vibe. They had you come in one way, bodyguard, this, that, and the other thing, and then you turn into, which was probably your peak there, the Funkasaurus, which is all personality driven. So kind of talk a little bit about the evolution to becoming the Funkasaurus, because it was a great character, but it was kind of the opposite of what you might get into wrestling for, especially being a big, giant, tough guy.
Taker never liked it. Taker's advice to me was, he came up to me, he was like, fall. I said, what? It's like, when you go out there, when you debut tonight, fall. If you fall on the stage, they'll scrap the whole thing. You can get back. You know, I just looked at him and I said, would you fall? And he said, no.
Mm-mm.
This is what the boss wanted.
Yeah.
After the feud with Edge and Christian, I had built up some caveat, and they started the House of Pain, where I was taking trinkets from people, and I was just being physical. And I probably spent probably all my time at TV rolling around with Arn for probably 3 hours a day. And as Arn says, how many damn shirts I got to change while we get you ready? You know, and of course, the plan was, this is going to be the next monster for Cena, which as a heel, that's what you want.
Sure.
You know? So, and the vignettes dropped when we were in Mexico, and you're excited, and you're training, and you're doing all these things, and everything I own is black. And I looked around, and crack jokes in the locker room because that's me, you know, and we're always messing. And unfortunately, it was Yoshitatsu that I was picking on because he showed up to TV with a white leather vest, like boots, leather pants, jacket, man purse, leather hat. And I think he spent like $12,000 on it. And we just couldn't believe why. No one was obsessed with Yoshitatsu more than TJ Wilson was. And I think I ran second. And TJ and I were just, well, while this was going on, and we were teasing them, and I was like calling them peanut butter or something, Mark Henry recorded it. And he was laughing, and he made the mistake of showing it to Vince. Like, look how funny this dude is. Mm. And he laughed. You know, ha, ha, ha. And then he went,
uh-oh, yeah.
Then the next meeting, are we sure this guy's a heel? He's funny. And they're like, yeah, he's a smartass. Everyone knows that. But he's funny, so he should be a babyface. And it wasn't like they were overloaded. Kane was making his comeback as a heel. Big Show was, he was going to be a heel. Mark Henry was coming back as a heel. So now you got four big guys that are heels. Three of them are proven stars. So who do you think is going to be the one to change? So, you know, it was just a... And Mark took the House of Pain gimmick and, you know, he won a championship with it. So he did
right.
He did really well. It's probably the best run of his career. Triple H came to me and he was like, hey, the boss, I was like, huh? How do you think that? And, you know, we had kids afraid of me. I'm beating guys up on superstars and like the crowd is reacting in fear and stuff. And my pigeon was afraid. And he was like, yeah, but there's more. And Triple H is a guy that we're like, he doesn't like bad news. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's going to tell you straight up, but he doesn't like ruining your day and your dreams, you know?
Right.
So he was basically like, he wants you to dance. And my first reaction was legitimately,
right.
WTF, I don't dance, bro. Like, even when I was in clubs, I didn't even bob my head. Like, I don't, yeah, my blackness yeah. stops at dancing, bro. Like, that's, you know. I'm just Scottish too, man. That's not happening. But I was like, shit, well, what do we do? And I just said to him, can I go back to Dusty and figure it out? We're not doing it tonight, right? He's like, oh, no, not tonight. You got a couple weeks. So I was like, so I'll go back. Let me get with Dusty and figure this out, you know? And I went to Dusty and I was like damn near crying. Like my dream just blew up in my face. And like I had Deep South. I was training 2-a-days and it was like me, Swagger, Kofi, TJ, Harry, Natty, you know, and all those guys had
sure.
got established, and I got let go for a little while, and then I was brought back, and so I'm at FCW, and, you know, I'm just ready to go, and here I am. I had that great run with Alberto, and we worked to get the chance to work with Edge and Christian, and so I was just ready to go, and frustrated, and I was no longer being like, oh, I'll wait my time. I was like, my time is now. So, and Dusty just looked me in the face. He goes, are you better than me? I was like, no, sir. Or no coach. He says, he put me in polka dots. And I was like, he said, and the diva he gave me? I was like, okay. Yeah, you're right. So he's like, so you got to dance. Yeah. He's like, so how are you going to dance? I was like, I have no clue. And he kicked everybody out of the building. He had the sound guy put on moves like Jagger. And it's just songs coming on. You can imagine, I'm sitting there, just standing there in this arena alone. He comes walking out of the office with his shirt off. And I was like, oh, what the hell are we doing here? And he's like, dance with me. And I'm like, I'm not dancing with you. He's like, dance with me. And we started dancing. And he's like, that's all you got? Y'all got within like 10 minutes. You would have thought it was like a Grease movie where the two chunky buffs are dancing around the building together. And before I knew it, I was having fun and laughing, and he, you know, he was doing all, showing me all his moves, and he's like, you can't use this one because they'll know it's me, it's money. And, you know, because no one was over like he was over, rest his soul. And legitimately, man, after dancing 30 minutes with him, I wasn't afraid of it anymore, you know, and then it became, I said, but I still need help. And he was like, well, ask Naomi, you know, she should have been on the road. She's our most talented. So I went to her and I begged her, and she was like, sure. Whatever you need, bro, I got you. So, you know, because I figured at the very least, I can't recreate. I'm not Fred Astaire, Michael Jackson. I can't, and my heart's not in dancing. So if I had two really good dancers around me, then I could maybe cover it up a little bit, you know, and learn as I go.
Right.
Because I didn't know what the timetable was going to be. So we started doing that, and Dusty just, you know, we kept getting back, and then I was down at Hard Knock South with Rob trying to think of names and stuff. And because originally I wanted me to be heavy G. I was like, no, one, you got me on a diet, and two, Heavy D just died. So I didn't want that. I didn't want that mantra on me. I remember Bret Hart hated it. Bret Hart said, this is, I don't think I've ever really heard him cuss, but he's like, this is bullshit. You're a killer. Why are you doing this to you? We need to do something about this. And I was like, Mr. Hart, with all due respect, don't try to save me. It'll just make it worse. You know, because then it'll be, I'll dance the entire match. So, and it just came up like, man, I was like, funk this. And I was like, I was saying something else. And then Rob was like, I don't know, Funkasaurus. And I was like, what'd you say? He's like, Funkasaurus. Like, what do we call? And I came up with Funkadactyls. And they're like, where would I be from? I guess Planet Funk was like, I think it was an album cover of Bootsy Collins or something like that.
Yeah, so he had George Clinton. Yeah.
Yeah. So we all came up with it. And Justin, thank God for Justin, man. They told Justin it was Heavy G from the Concrete Jungle. They had a bunch of stuff going on. And at this point, bro, if you're going to go out, you got to go out in a blaze of glory. So I just walked up to Justin. He's like, hey, I just want to go over your introduction for tonight. I was like, oh, awesome. Heavy, I was like, it's from Planet Funk, the Funkasaurus. And these are the Funkadactyls. And he said, is this approved? I was like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time.
Big time.
He should have known then the fact that, oh, I can come up
right.
I had no names to back up this allegation. And he did it. And he came out. I'll never forget it. At that point, they had not seen me except for the vignettes where I was murdering people, and no one talked to me. And this is how great the locker room was. No one leaked anything. Nobody leaked a thing, which was so great about our locker room. We didn't have knives out. You know, we were all in the same kind of pit, and they kind of liked that crab in the bucket mentality. It was more of like everyone was, anytime anyone had anything going, the boys would get in line, we'd all help each other. And it was my turn, and I remember Myers and JTG were arguing with Triple H for who could be my opening match, and they knew what it was going to be. You know, guys like that, that's just the cut of crew we had. We went out there, and I remember you could have dropped a pin in the audience, man. They were just like, what? And there was a guy, he was probably 40, who had shaved his mohawk like mine. He had a Brodus Clay t-shirt he made himself. He just stood up with what could only be described as a tear in his eye and yelled, you suck, Brodus Clay. Like, he just, and I look, and I mean, it echoed through the building, right? And
Clay.
And I just looked at him and said, my bad. And the place went nuts because you're not supposed to look in the TV and break the fourth wall. So I started doing it. I was like, should I get him? And like, the people were just, and next thing you know, it was quiet with the cheers. And then we were on, and it was like, I think it was like 23 weeks in a row that we were like undefeated and doing all that stuff. And guys were just supporting. And it was probably the toughest thing in my career, but it was the best thing in my career. And honestly, it prepared me. It was after the Funkasaurus, I have no fear of anything in front of the camera.
Mm.
Because if you can do that, you can do anything. So, you know, and there's always going to be wrestling purists that have a comment, whatever. But for me, that was the best to really show what I could do. Because, and once the bell rang, Vince was like, I don't care what you do, your thing. Once the bell rang, be aggressive, be what got you here, be what got you signed.
Right.
In the meantime, you know, and I grew up, JYD brought the kids in the ring, Dusty brought the kings in the ring. Who the hell was I to not want to do that? And that was my role. Now, you would be like, well, you're not going to be a champion, but no, but I'm going to set the show up every night.
Mm.
And there's a certain honor in that. And I enjoyed that. I liked being the one that got the party started. I want to wrestle Punk and Cena and guys like yourself, absolutely, you know, but sometimes you can't have it all and you always think there's time. And the way it's worked out now this is my time. This is where I get to put it all together against Trevor. I get a little showmanship in the ring. And it's an exciting time.
What was the peak of the Funkasaurus? Was there a match or a feud that you had where you're like, this is it?
I think, even though our match got cut at SummerSlam, but our house shows and stuff, and we were doing, he called it the Figure Five. And in Biloxi, Mississippi was probably, I think we were supposed to go 8. We ended up going 12. Arn met us when we were coming in. And he said, I know why you went over. Because you were I heard that crowd too.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron and I were basically, one of the things about, just to go back a little bit, when I was on NXT with Johnny and EC3 and Brian Saxon, those guys, we were the event after they got pulled from Sci-Fi Network. So Nobody gave a shit about what we were doing on the internet. Agents didn't care, and we were just basically, we all got together and said, we're going to work this. And Daniel Bryan and EC3, and we would decide who was going to win each event each night, and we would all work around it, and I would be the heel. And so we, and Matt Stryker was in on it with us, and we were getting over because we went in a bit, and then all of a sudden, like, hey, what's going on? Who's doing this tonight? What's going on tonight?
Right.
The only guy who knew what was going on was Finley, because, you know, you can't talk slick to Finley. But Finley was like, do it. You know, keep doing your thing. Like, ignore the writers. Keep doing your thing. So that helped tremendously going into me and Aaron. And Aaron was like, I had a fucking source, much merch, right? And I was like, hey, take my necklace, break my necklace, you know, take my leg. And then we came up with the thing, like, I'm going to, when I walk to the ring, you're supposed to jump me on my way to the ring. I was like, clip my leg out from under me from the back. And if you do it right, I'll fall up, not under.
Right.
But they legitimately thought he broke my leg. When you trick Arn and he thinks your leg's broke, like, that's awesome. And I remember,
yeah.
And I milked it. I had the boot on and the, I had the boot and the crutches on at the airport, and I was doing the whole thing. And we had so much momentum. And then I was working with a limp. And when Vince did not like that, and basically Triple H said, hey, you're healed. I was like, what? He's like, you're healed. Boss hates it. Thinks you're moving too slow. Doesn't like it. And then I had the feud with Show. Started with Show, and he used the announce table to beat me with, give me three, but it hit, unfortunately, in the heat of the battle, sometimes you don't always get hit square.
Mm-hmm.
And where it's up on the shoulders, he hit me in the small of the back, and it just crushed my sciatica. So, but of course, you don't want to give up your spot, so you keep working when you're banged up.
Right.
And so I was, but Rob, we worked hard to get it back, and they were like, maybe get surgery. And I'm like, nah, screw that. I'll just do it the old-fashioned way. But probably Aaron, anytime I was with East Slater, Dolph and I, Dolph was probably the most fun. And it was such a big feud with him and Swagger and Vicky and me. And Dolph took that amazing headbutt a night after WrestleMania off the bleachers. So if I had to give the gold medal, Dolph and Swag. And Swag, I think, things when he was tagging with Cesaro, probably one of the greatest tag teams never in terms of just workers and guys.
Sure.
They should have been champs. Should have been champs forever. I remember we were trying to get them established, and there was tons of funk, and we were – kind of had hit a high spot, and we were kind of whittling down, and my attitude sucked at the time. And I looked at and Swag and him were up, and I was like, hey, I owe you about 75 overs. If you want to bring back the ankle lock, get me an ankle lock. No issue. Like, let's get that back. Because Swag literally for 2 years was the Funkasaurus's favorite prey, you know?
Right, right.
And we had that match on Raw with Mick Foley and Piper, and Dusty came out, and it was me and Swag, and it was supposed to be like 12 minutes, a big feud, but certain individuals talked so long that we had legitimately 40 seconds.
Oh my gosh.
And Swag just looked at me and said, headbutt splash. Even though you're going up, there's no winner in that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You have an All-American former champion who, without even a blink, I think I was more upset about it than he was.
Mm-hmm.
And so as far as I'm concerned, I owe him whenever he asks for it, it's there. And I was able to give that back to him in that tag tournament match and a couple other times on like Superstars and stuff. So I was just lucky, man. I was just surrounded by so many good guys that didn't really have egos and stuff. Because sometimes it's like, it's one thing if you go out there and you're wrestling, you know, Jericho for the heavyweight championship and he, you know, like, 3 minutes gets you in the walls and that's it. It's the champ.
Right.
But you know, when you go out there, a guy who's from Planet Funk, you know what I'm saying? It's a little different. Like you're a hiccup away from being PM News if you don't watch what's going on. So, you know.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
I remember in Jacksonville, was the first night I ever met Tony Khan, and it's the first night I ever met you because you were there with Snoop Dogg when Snoop Dogg guest hosted Raw.
Yep.
And that's because you were his bodyguard. That's kind of essentially how you got in the business. How was that working with Snoop? Every time I see him, he's the best guy, the friendliest guy. What's it like actually being his bodyguard?
I was with the WWE Deep South, and FCW, I got let go, and I went back to work with Snoop. And we were coming in on a European tour, and he told me we were going to Jacksonville to Raw, and I was like, switch me out. I got fired. I don't want to go back.
Right.
You know, no one wants to go back and get fired, you know, and he was like, it'll be fine, man. Like, you with me now. Like, don't sweat the shit. Like, it's not that, man. I was like, he's like, Brett, don't sweat it. You're on a whole other level now. So, and the plan was not to go back. I didn't make it to TV my first run. So I felt it was I took an L and looked at it like, you know, I gave it my best shot and it just didn't work out. And I'm not one to marinate on shit. It's time to move on.
Sure.
So when we went back and we came through, you know, John Laurinaitis and Cena came out to shake Snoop's hands, and they turned right and then shake my hand, and they were like, hey, great seeing you and this, that, whatever. So Snoop was right. And of course it led to, but Snoop is just the most laid back guy, man. He's non-confrontational. So if you're mad at him, you'll never know it. That's my job. And I was extremely good at being the bad news guy. That was like my thing.
Right.
But our relationship changed when I started coaching youth football with him on this. And it wasn't on purpose. I was there to bodyguard and I was just chilling. But his offensive lineman's footwork was terrible. And I played ball for such a long time. I finally just couldn't take the shit no more. And I just said, hey, excuse me, can I just, you're killing me. And I told the kids, like, hey, pigeon toes, like John Wayne. And they're like, who's John Wayne? I was like, oh, man, that's so much gold. I was like, John Wayne's a legend. And then one of the kids says, he hated black people. I said, but he might have. But, like, John Wayne, the movie character, walks the way you need to walk in football. Okay?
Right.
So just pigeon toed and walking the way I'm telling you to walk. And he's like, K-Mac, his defensive coordinator, is like, oh, you know so much. Why don't you coach him? I said, give me an hour and we'll see you in the scrimmage. And Snoop was like, and after that, Snoop's like, you're my O-line coach. So, and our relationship just kind of grew. And we used to have like four or five bodyguards, and it got down to two. It was like one guy at night and me and Snoop. And he's just one of those guys that you always know where you stand with, which is nice and rare in our business. After Raw, he just looked at me and he says, you got to go back. You can do this the rest of your life, man, but you can't wrestle the rest of your life. So, because he was there when John was like, hey, we made a mistake. We'd like to bring you back. And I said, you know, I got to do this. Like, your ex-girlfriend dumped you. And she sees you and asks you to go on a date again. I'm so proud of myself.
Right.
Hey, I said, have a couple weeks to think about it. And he was like, sure. And I just remember on the inside, like, yes, you know, I would have said yes right then, but I had some decorum. I like bodyguarding, but Stu was a pretty good read on guys. And he's like, you're just not a stand in the back guy. He goes, I got enough of those guys. He goes, you're always making jokes and you're entertaining when you're bodyguarding. You might as well get paid for it. So, I had his blessing, which was huge, and we've stayed close, and he's always checking in on me, and he wrote the blurb on my book, which was phenomenal. I learned a lot from him in terms of presence and how to handle yourself behind stage and being prepared. A lot of people don't realize, because they always just see you're allowed to see the weed side of things, where he's like, but the man doesn't sleep. He sleeps 4 hours a day, tops. Like, he's always working, and his work ethic is contagious, but the only way you can do, and just like yourself, the only way guys are able to maintain careers at a high level is by putting in the work and cutting the nonsense out.
Right.
And even now, if I needed some advice, he's a phone call away. But unless I really am butting my head on the wall against something other than just teasing them about the Lakers sucking, that's about it.
Well, you mentioned being a guy that didn't want to be in the back and be a guy that's kind of in front of the camera. And just to kind of touch on the Fox News gig again, I mean, obviously you look a certain way. And when you first see a guy like you as a, you know, political pundit, I'm sure there was a lot of people going, come on, how did you get over, shall we say, using a wrestling term, in that world, which is very much a looks type of world?
There was a lot of F words. They weren't saying, come on. They're like, look at this guy. He looks like he's going to beat everybody up and sell drugs at the end of the show. You know,
right.
That image is painted like a conservative is a white guy in a suit who goes to church and has affairs on his wife. Like, that's a conservative, you know, and
right.
And a brother and someone who's not, I haven't changed the way I dress since I was 13. So one, people have to really be willing to take the risk. And Greg Gutfeld was like, I don't care what you say. You make people laugh.
Mm.
I want you on my show and I'll take the heat to use the wrestling. And what started out as first is they, just like anything else, you judge a book by a cover. and they'd be staring at him, this big bearded wrestler with tattoos, black with his, you know, his, the way he talks and stuff. But the stuff I was saying, I think it was when the stuff came out that I took a risk and just, I just kept it real. And I think it was the comment I made that resisting arrest doesn't make you Rosa Parks, it makes you a criminal. And I went through situations that when I was pulled over, I've had a gun in my head for basically the way I looked and stuff by a bad cop. But I've also had, for that one incident, 100 incidences where police officers that gave me advice, took care of me, were there for me, gave me a break, smartened me up. And I also took responsibility. What was I doing at that time?
Right.
You know, I'm hanging out with drug dealers. So my whole message has been, you can have two thoughts on one subject. We get so caught up in this one lane of thinking, and everything has to be in a box, not being in the box and not allowing myself to be in the box. And if your convictions are good and you're genuine and people can identify with anything you say, they don't give a damn what you look like. Mm-hmm. Your words matter. And when you start to, when people go, what is this guy? I'm like, oh, that's funny. I didn't think of it that way. Oh, you know what? I like this guy. You know, because old white women, if I walked into a store 10 years ago, would go the other side and literally lock their car from inside the grocery store. They click, and they get nervous. They won't say anything. Now they come up to me. They want a hug and, of course, get something off the top shelf and give me some criticisms and things I could do better and invite me to dinner and all that kind of stuff. So once people get past this and get to the exterior, they don't give a damn about those things, because those are barriers that put up to keep people from expressing themselves. And, you know, and it's like, and I've been able to, and for me, I feel it's to open the door. Like, I said that like Fox is like, I could have a podcast with Kat, and they're like, hey, we'd like you to do like a political podcast. And I said, no, I won't do that, but I will do a podcast with my wrestling buddies talking about life. What about that? And they're like, you want to do a wrestling podcast on Fox News Radio? I was like, yeah. And they're like, fine, we'll try it. It's kicking the ass of the super conservative ones on there. And it's like, you know, Kevin Kiley, you know, A-Rai, I got him to come out of seclusion. And yeah, Trevor Murdoch, which is ironic because Trevor's on there. Aaron's on there. So a lot of my good, and we bring legends in all the time to like talk about, like Godfather came on and he's the greatest wrestler of all time because he never really wanted to do it. So he kept getting these awesome gimmicks because he was the one guy going, hey, Vince, I think I'm going to go home. Wait, how about this? I was like, yeah. I'm trying.
And each gimmick got less and less bumping. He didn't have to bump at all by that last one.
He's a genius, you know? And I was trying not to be angry at all. It's like, oh, man. I'd be like in the hallway, like, if he looked at me, I'd be like, yes, he looked at me today, you know? And it just kind of like, just, then they're like, oh, wow, we really like Trevor. And oh, we like Kevin. And we all like this guy. So that's the one thing that's been a little awkward, because I didn't think that I'd be challenging, at least because I thought it was going to be Nick and Trevor. We all kind of thought it was going to be Nick and Trevor. So, you know, we have our podcast, and now as it gets closer, it's, you know, getting awkward and uncomfortable because Trevor is a pure wrestling. You know, he's hard, the spitting image of Harley Race. He was his prize pupil, and he's starting to, the attention that it's coming, he doesn't like being referred to as, hey, who's that guy? Tyrus wrestling. You know, and that's not on me. That's, you know, that's on him. But it's leading to, like, we're not talking as much, hardly at all now. And, you know, because he knows, especially with coming in, I can't be 300 and, you know, 65, 70 pounds wrestling Trevor.
Right.
When I wrestled Pope at that weight, I was able to lean on Pope all night and, you know, can't lean on Trevor. Like, it's going to be a fight. And he's a big guy. He's not somebody that you can just, like, bully around, you know. And what started out is we said we're going to shake hands when it's over. You know, we have friends and our kids are friends and all that stuff. But it's, you know, he's going to try to punch me in the mouth and I'm going to try to punch him in the mouth. So it's going to be ugly. And like he said, I'm going to have to down there kill him to get it off him. So it's going to be a challenge.
And this match is in the famous Chase in St. Louis. I mean, it's to talk about the historical Chase Theater, Chase Ballroom.
Really cool was that my son's grandfather, Haku, or Tonga, or Ming, or whatever you want to call him by, he won his first championship in St. Louis. He also, his first title defense was against a very young Trevor Murdoch, who upset him for that title. So for me, I got some get back for the fam,
right,
so to speak. But, you know, that was one of those territories where everybody who was anybody was at the Chase. And it's a unique venue in itself. It's a hotel where you don't leave. movie theater, gym, everything, you shop, everything is all contained in there. And the last year at the Chase, Ric Flair was a special guest, and he came out and he gave a few words. But, and, you know, Austin Idol, who's part of my management team, he had quite a few nights at the Chase. Harley Race, rest his soul, had some huge nights at the Chase. Baby Doll's going to be there. J.J. Dillon's going to be there. You know, the fan in me was like, I get Baby Doll, you get J.J. Dillon. Let's see what happens. You know, it's always great when you're able to showcase NWA history, but respect it. And when J.J. Dillon's watching and Barry Windham's watching, and Barry Windham's probably one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
Agreed.
And some people will say he's a great big man. No, he just happened to be big.
All across the board, yeah.
But you name one style he couldn't do, that flying lariat or that drop kick or that bulldog or the superplex, or when he joined the Horsemen and he was putting claws, everything he did was at a high level. I know in that era, they always talk about Lex Luger and Sting, and rightfully so. But when you're talking about the greatest worker of that era, I think it's hands down Barry Windham. But the fact that he's going to be there, and so there's a lot of pressure. Good pressure, though. This ain't a laying on the ground headlock. Like, we got to earn it. And plus, let's not kid ourselves. You just raised the bar. You and Moxley raised the damn bar. Mm-hmm. And I text Trevor. I said, no, we're not talking, but I know you are. You watching what I'm watching right now? And he just wrote back, yeah, but don't talk to me. So.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hey man, last few questions for you. What's it like having Haku as, you know, your son's grandfather? Obviously, you had a baby with his daughter. I mean, that's a little bit of extra added pressure right there.
Well, his son, Tavita, is one of my closest friends.
Yeah.
Probably the greatest uncle I could ever ask for. And we were a tag team together called the Colossal Connection Part 2 in FCW. My first match where I said, I'm going to do this was King Tonga versus Big John Studd at Madison Square Garden. If you've never seen this match, Big John Studd looks like he was in the sun. He was so red from chops. And
hell yeah.
Tonga breaks out a Hawaiian dance in the middle of the ring. And I mean, Madison Square Garden was going crazy. You know, you don't, as a fan, you don't read lips, but as a wrestler, you do. And Bobby's like, what are you doing? We don't need this guy. Let's go. And Stun puts him aside. He goes, no, I'm getting this kid over. And he went back in the ring and took more. I mean, and it was just one of those things where I get goosebumps just talking about it.
Right.
So when I got the, hey, my dad wants to meet you. And it was, we were met at Neutral Ground, a Golden Corral of all places. I couldn't stop cheesing because I'm about to meet one of my heroes. Apparently, previous relationships meeting didn't go well. So within 30 seconds, I started talking to him about the Madison Square Garden. He laughed, and the two of us, we sat there for 3 hours as he told me wrestling stories, and she actually left. And we've been inseparable ever since, even after, you know, things go on. But I know him as Pa. He adores his grandson and my grandson, and he is the sweetest guy in the world. And you talk about reputation and stuff, but he'll give up his bed for his grandson. He'll be sleeping on the floor. I'm like, Pop, why are you? He can sleep on the floor. No, he's my grandson. Like, and then anytime I have him, ironically, when I was upset about the Funkasaurus, you know who loved it the most?
Tonga.
He did. He was like, this is so great. Oh my God, the dancing you were doing. I was like, oh, this. And I'm sitting there going, you're not mad? He's like, no, brother. No, cash that check.
Brother.
So at the collar and elbow, him and Barbarian were put in the Hall of Fame. He let me give the speech, which was a tremendous honor. And so I was able to give a speech for that. But yeah, we talked. One thing sucks about my son's in Florida and I'm in Louisiana, but I never worry about my son because he's with Ma and Pa. And
yeah.
He's surrounded. And we FaceTime every day and he'll hop on there and he'll be NWA my matches and stuff and this, that, whatever. And I'm trying to get him to be at the Chase. I'm like, you come out, you know, but it really was. It was just one of those relationships where the day we met, I just fell in love.
Yeah.
You know? He's just such a great
one of the best guys.
Anyone who's been around him, and you know that, like, his reputation is not accurate.
One of my favorite people I've ever met in the business, for sure. Last question for you, man. What's your all-time favorite matches you've ever had?
TJ Wilson and me in Mexico. I was coming up right after NXT. Him and I, we went 15 minutes in Mexico. No one knew who the hell we were, and we stole the damn show. Stole the show. And I remember coming back through, and Randy said, yeah, TJ was, and I wanted to change the finish because they were going nuts, and I kept dumping him. He kept coming in, and I was like, hit the knees once you get me, just hit. And he was like, to see if you could go, fool. Like, greatest mind that I've ever had the pleasure of being in the ring with. That match will always be, because that's when you come through and you're like, you know what, I belong. Because, you know, the big guys, sometimes we get treated a little differently and given opportunities that we're not necessarily we deserve.
Yeah.
And TJ Wilson's not going to give that to you. You're the shits. He's going to tell you. He's actually going to enjoy it. And for him to look at me and go, I will work you anytime, any place, man. And that to me was one of those things where a guy had a lot of respect for him. Somebody coming from the tutelage of the dungeon. And you guys know who can go and cannot go, because no one trained like you guys trained. So
yeah,
being a part of that, spending so many times getting Harry Smith teaching me how to do Indian death locks, which might have to break that shit out, Trevor. So
there you go.
That's my favorite match. That's the match where I was like, you know what? Finley gave me the nod. Like, usually he had some criticism. He's like, nope, that'll do, pig. That'll do. So that's my favorite match.
Well, dude, you got a huge match coming up with Trevor Murdoch. Could be possibly the NWA world champion here. And it's great talking with you, man. Congratulations on all your success. And we always enjoy watching you.
And thanks for what you're doing, man. And I enjoy watching you. And I consider myself an honorary member of the Chris Jericho Appreciation Club.
There you go, man.
Keep doing what you're doing, Ed.
Take care, brother.
Thank you so much for your time, boss.
We'll see you soon, man. Good luck this week.
Yep.
Cheers, man.